Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of Global Gaming Business Magazine, and this week we feature an interview with Paul Steelman, the founder and president of Steelman Partners, on Resorts World Las Vegas, the new Genting development on the Las Vegas Strip. Paul Steelman is one of the most visible of the architects in the casino industry. He learned under Steve Wynn and has been responsible for many of the most striking building designs in the casino business. His success in Asia recently paid dividends when officials of Genting BHD used his Las Vegas office to announce the development of Resorts World Las Vegas, which will be built on Boyd Gaming's site of the former Echelon project. Steelman explains how he got involved, some of the early thinking about the project, and what it should look like once it is completed sometime in 2016 or 17. He also talks about his experience with working on projects in Asia, where he designed the first Western-style casino in Macau, Sands Macau. He also talks about his hometown, Atlantic City, and his involvement in the redesign of Trump Plaza, recently purchased by California's Marullo Group. He spoke with me at his offices in Las Vegas just 2 days after the Genting press conferences. Paul Steelman, thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. It's good to see you again. I just saw you a couple of days ago with the announcement of the Genting project, and that's very exciting not only for you and Genting, but for the city of Las Vegas. It's the first big development that's been announced on the Strip since the recession, and it's real exciting for the city. How did that come about? What started with you getting involved in that?
Well, we started approximately 9 months ago working with Genting and a few of the developers that work for Genting, looking at the various sites throughout Las Vegas, and designed a project for them based on their criteria of having an Asian-inspired gaming resort utilizing some of the historical elements of palatial China and palatial Asia, and trying to come up with what they would consider would be a competitive product, which would then enable them to negotiate and purchase a piece of property. It's designed for several pieces of property around the town. As you can imagine, there's there's many that are available. And it landed on the Echelon site, and negotiations and analysis, by the way, began on the property as well as the building asset that was constructed by Boyd.
Okay.
And we sit here today.
Okay. Now, you said you're at the press conference the other day, you're saving millions of dollars by utilizing some of the design and the footprint and the structures that were already planned for the Echelon project. How sophisticated was that design, and what is planned to update it now?
Well, it's a very sophisticated design. There was a large study taken on by our office, several engineers we employed, several valuation consultants. In our business, as you know, time is money.
Sure.
And we really wanted to be sure that we could build a competitive product in the year 2013, not necessarily using a design that was created in 2005 or 2006 or 2007 or whatever it was created. So we wanted to be sure that the elements that were there were, in fact, what we would consider a competitive product, going back to a theme resort, going back to paying homage to the pedestrian nature and the suburban nature of the Las Vegas Boulevard, and, of course, creating the themed and attraction elements in which Genting wanted to build the project. It was good for a couple things. Number one is the tower is well-designed, and there is approximately 2.2 million square feet under construction there.
Right.
Of course, Las Vegas builds the best garages in the world. You know, they're all speed ramps.
Right.
Joe Lagumina built a garage for Caesars in the late 80s with parking directions. And so the garages were good. Central plant was really kind of complete. Great central plant. It's just missing the gen sets. The theater was a beautiful theater, 4,000-seater, three balconies, you know, so it rivals the you know, the Bolshoi.
Right.
I mean, so
right.
And it's a theater designed in the spirit of the of many of the great classical historical theaters, including the Smith Center. The convention center is in the right spot, designed, you know, based on a modern-day Gaylord types of facility. So all those are good designed elements. If you would point to each one of those, Bob Bogner must have had in his mind that said, well, I like that theater and I like that convention center. Of course, the curvedness of the tower is a good thing for us. As you know, Steve's new towers are curved, and some of the best towers in Las Vegas are curved. Bellagio comes to mind, and of course, the curved shape is very Asian. It's very welcoming.
Right.
It doesn't. It has no turnoffs. It doesn't. The building doesn't turn its shoulders against you.
Mm-hmm.
So it has some good feng shui components. So there was a lot of great reasons for us to use it, and it probably saves about a year and a half in construction time. We did many schemes and still are doing schemes, still doing them, completing the master plan, the final master plan in which this is submitted to the county. But we did many schemes and many different configurations, many variations, trying to incorporate the elements, and we sit here today with a successful master plan design.
Now, obviously, this one had achieved a lot of the approvals needed from the county. Is that going to speed the process when you go back to the county with the revised plans?
Well, you know, we have a marvelous county here.
Right.
I mean, our county government, county commissioners, all the way down the planning and zoning and the building department is absolutely marvelous. And we have already had our initial meetings this week, and we are going to be submitting our beautification plan because it's very important to the chairman, KT, that the beautification of that site start now,
right?
And then the county has agreed to expedite certain of the approvals for us so that we can get through the new process right now. But it does have a planning certificate into the year 2018.
Okay,
that certificate needs to be modified somewhat, but it still has the same basic legs as the old project that does. So
when will construction restart at that site now?
Well, the beautification, as soon as we get the planning permits. So we're out bidding that right now, and we'll be showing that the chairman approved the concept of the beautification. We will be showing him for his design approvals in the next couple weeks. We probably have about 2 weeks to a month in some sort of planning and bidding and things of this nature. But we would like to start the beautification within the month.
Okay.
And as far as documentation of the overall project, it's the intention to start as soon as possible. But face it, there hasn't been a situation where in Las Vegas where a building has been half-started by someone else, taken over, and restarted again.
Right.
So they have committed to a 2014 start date, and I know we'll definitely make that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, no question. Is there enough construction workers left in Vegas now?
I know. Well, there's an amazing. We have a group of amazing construction unions here in Las Vegas, probably some of the best in the world, especially in the concrete trades.
Sure.
You know, the concrete innovation here is, you know, in parking garages and hotel towers, virtually leads the world. You know, starting historically from Gus Rapone and Tony Marnell and Dean Contracting and these types of guys that built unbelievable concrete buildings. I don't keep tracks of the construction workers. I know that the unions are very happy about this, and I believe that, as always, the unions will come, you know, will step up to the plate.
Sure, right.
And I really do believe that our construction unions will, in fact, do that. You have to realize not only is it a big job for Las Vegas, but it's a very big job for America.
Right, sure.
So it might be the largest job in America.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure of that, but it's up there. It's in the top three or four, I'm sure.
Are you going to use the same builder that that Boyd was using?
We're not sure who we're using in any of the building or engineering or things of this nature. KT Lim Genting is a public company, so there has to be some documentation and bidding, and that's what we propose to do. It won't be, we're at least not recommending to Genting that it would be a hard bid of any sorts. We firmly are believers of working with a contractor starting soon after the the fundamental master plan is developed and approved, and working with that contractor through estimating, and so that when in fact we do get completed, when our documentation is complete and the engineering is coordinated, that we don't have to, you know, retrench mm-hmm. and redo things
right.
on the basis of either not bidding or on the basis of bidding it too late.
Right.
So we want it to be a logical practice, a project. You have to realize that, you will realize that Genting has a remarkable success in this line of on-time and on-budget construction. I believe that they opened their Sentosa facility, which I don't know
right.
if you've visited.
I have,
yes.
It's
massive.
It is.
Has a theme park and three hotels mm-hmm. and just a recently opened gigantic aquarium with rooms that are in the
right
that the fish swim around and things like that. I mean, it's pretty exotic.
Yeah.
Lots of water-based attractions, major master plan retail, and they opened 1 year before Marina Bay Sands did.
Right. So right. absolutely. So this will be the first theme project on the strip. I think that for the last 15 years or since Bellagio, is that right?
Since Bellagio. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what? Why did they decide to go with a theme project rather than something like we've seen recently, the modern designs?
Well, I think I'm not sure any of the modern designs have ever proved to be successful. We've always said as one of our rules of gaming design is that it in fact has to be a suburban look.
Right.
People go to a suburban place for a vacation, and if you want to go to an urban place, New York or mm-hmm. Chicago or whatever, then you go to New York or Chicago.
Right.
Las Vegas always had this kind of ethereal, sun and fun meets mm-hmm. naughtiness.
Right.
And when sun and fun meets naughtiness doesn't really happen in a glass-inspired office building.
Right.
So, I mean, not that the buildings are. I don't want to be critical of them. But I do feel that... that are great buildings for years since Jay Sarno have been a sketch of a journey,
mm-hmm.
and that, as I said the other day, I mean, and I really do believe that whether that architecture is modern or it's historically inspired or if it's historical, then we have to take a guest to a place they've never been, and of
mm-hmm.
course we have to make that place very desirable so that guest will come over and over and over again. Now I think we're some of the theme properties have gone wrong and some have gone right. Some are great, vast interpretations of a theme and use historical coloration,
mm-hmm.
scale, and content to actually create the design. And others actually just take this theme too far.
Right.
And then that theme becomes old quickly, and then you become kind of a non-remember-repeat
mm-hmm.
Casino. You might remember, but you most certainly will not repeat the experience.
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to do here is, yes, we think that the progression of the 500-year-old historical style of Chinese palatial architecture to today is pretty unique. And what's probably going to be a little bit more unique in this theme project than most is that it will have a progression of 500-year-old historical must-see, must-participate-in, attractions and architecture, and then you will pass through the great gates mm-hmm. of and into more of a modern world.
Right.
So that it won't be this stodgy, misscaled thing trying to cram itself in a building of
mm-hmm.
logical proportions, which so many theme projects are. Of course,
right.
Walt Disney would be rolling around in his grave if he saw some of the themed things that people have done over the
right.
years. And so that's kind of what we want to do.
Okay. Now we know Las Vegas, is not so gaming-centric, certainly on the Strip anymore. So what are some of the non-gaming amenities that you're going to offer at this project?
Well, we've given the front of the facility, the massive frontage on Las Vegas Boulevard, to a retail entertainment district.
Mm-hmm.
And that district will be featured nightclubs and restaurants and retail offerings shows that will occur, free shows that will
mm-hmm.
occur nightly, water, light, and image shows on our great wall, the transition elements.
Mm-hmm.
you know, al fresco dining opportunities that sit slightly above the strip that have King of the Hill views. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine a great urban entertainment attraction, suburban palatial entertainment attraction that is riddled with events. Mm-hmm. And that's a great thing. One of the big things is that, you know, it is a series of towers on the north and the south, the north side being the Genting brands, the south side being secondary brands. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've learned from the planning in Macau that this pool in between, even if the sun doesn't quite work, the sun studies, although we've done extensive sun studies on this building, that the pool in between is a big attraction. Mm-hmm. And K.T. Lim loves the idea of a water park, something that is enclosed more 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And so right now we have a very Las Vegas first, a enclosed water park. Right. That is on the roof that all of the hotels and convention center will be able to participate in.
Okay.
And that's one of the big attractions. Of course, there are so many Chinese elements that are fairly known, the Terracotta Warriors from,
right. Mm-hmm.
from China. Of course, they're on a traveling Terracotta Warriors from Xi'an. They're on a traveling exhibit going around the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I might actually run up there to actually go see it in San Francisco. The Panda Bear exhibit, we'd like to practice some what we call panda diplomacy. Obviously, it's a decision of the Chinese government.
Sure.
Now. It's not our decision. We would like, and we think with the attitude towards this project, towards Asia, towards China, that we would like them to weigh favorably and give us the proper requirements so that we could create this very, very special attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there is such a business-to-business relationship that our trade center / convention center will be a business-to-business offering.
Right.
And we think that that gives us the necessary improvements that allow us to, in fact, have a different offering, mm-hmm. something that some people come to cherish and like, and also advance our city and our town and mm-hmm. our profession and our occupation.
Sure.
Casino gaming is, cracks me up now. I mean, we used to do buildings that, the building was 50% gaming.
Right, yeah.
And now it's 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So, but obviously gaming pays for a lot of mm-hmm. it still. So.
I guess Genting's presence in Asia, they can use it the way MGM and Wynn and Las Vegas Sands has to bring Asian gamblers here. Those have been the three most successful Las Vegas Strip properties because of that Asian connection. I guess they're trying to do the same thing.
Well, they have big facilities, big Asian facilities, mm-hmm. and they are very, very smart, good operators. And like Jonathan Galvanez said, with the boomerang effect, that they all bring money back here from Asia, and
right.
they also bring customers.
Mm-hmm.
And, I would think that the same will happen with Genting. They have a big influence in Asian gaming, both in Malaysia, still today, I don't think that there is a facility that holds as many employees as Genting,
right.
Malaysia. I think it has 15,000 or
right.
something direct employees, which is a pretty incredible
thing.
It is.
It's amazing.
So from Malaysia, from Singapore, from Manila, they will be hopefully creating a bridge between the East and the West. And of course, if that could ever assist the airport here, that'd be great.
Sure, absolutely. It'd
be great for me because, I travel there every month.
Right, exactly.
So
it'd be nice to be able to get in easily and not have to change in San Francisco or LA.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the cost. There's a pretty extreme cost variation here that I've heard quoted between $2 billion and $7 billion. Is the $7 billion like, the end of the rainbow, or is $2 billion more reasonable right now?
I can't really comment on the cost right now because, first of all, it's a multi-billion dollar project.
Mm-hmm.
It would be one of the more expensive ones in Las Vegas. But you have to realize that the land value is much cheaper than people have recently seen. I think it's cheaper. It's probably the best land purchase since Steve bought the dunes,
sure.
to be honest with you.
Right.
So the land is much less. The asset that there we're in the process of calculating it, there is a different construction market here, one that is not as commodities driven mm-hmm. as it was when City Center was being built. And so consequently what we'll do is we have a process here that we do what's called a snapshot set.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the process of doing that right now. And that snapshot set starts to be our financial guide.
Okay.
And I think we will, with this snapshot set, become, you know, the business plans and the construction estimates will begin to align. And that's an important feature for us because, you know, Genting doesn't have the reputation of overspending,
right.
number one. They do have the reputation of building big attractions, mm-hmm. Number two, Universal Theme Park in right. Sentosa. And so they want to have the biggest bang for their dollar, and they want to take that in a slow pace. So mm-hmm. I can't really give you a final number now, right. but it will be announced. Yeah. I mean, it's a public company.
And
so
it will be multi-billion, as
you
said.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Good. I would like to move on to some other Asian business here. You've had remarkable success in Asia from this time you developed Sands Macau, the first Western-style casino to open there. And what is it that attracted you to Asia to begin with?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. You know, our first Asian projects were for Hyatt
mm-hmm.
Back in the early 90s. Where the Filipino or Pacor started issuing mm-hmm. some Philippine gaming licenses. That was my first trip that I ever went to Macau.
Okay.
When I went to the Lisboa Hotel, I just stood there in the smoke and went, wow. It was an incredible experience to me. When I was fortunate enough to be awarded the project by Sheldon Adelson, Bill Widener for the Sands, of course, I was awarded the project, I guess, on many, many reasons. I think they wanted someone from Las Vegas. They promised to build a Las Vegas resort.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at it more as a different type of gambling. I wasn't trying to import Las Vegas there.
Mm-hmm.
I had pretty significantly studied the gambling habits and the culinary habits and those types of things of the Asian gamblers, and I came up with a pretty different solution for the Sands.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, at one time, the Sands had over 850
right.
gaming tables. It was tremendously successful. We built it for $181 million, built it from design thinking on a Labor Day weekend with Mr. Adelson. We created it. Total project was less than 600 days. Our success in Asia has to do with we know the market, we understand gambling,
mm-hmm.
we also understand where the gambling architecture is coming from
right.
and going to it. And that was apparent at the Lisboa.
Mm-hmm.
And so we understand those things, and we understand the mentality of the Chinese player, Asian player,
mm-hmm.
and what they want, and how few steps they want to take.
Right, exactly.
And so we
bring the food to me, right?
More or less. It's always interesting whenever we go to another country. We're working on a new casino in Spain right mm-hmm. now, and we're working new casinos in Holland, as you know. It's always interesting to go and actually do the study of the mm-hmm. of the gaming report. I never forget a story with Bill Harrod years ago. Henry Conversano told me the story. Bill could never understand why people gambled.
Right.
And why you would make it nicer and nicer and nicer, proving that you were getting richer and richer and richer. Mm-hmm. Why would a person right. actually gamble? So he commissioned Stanford University to do a study. And Stanford was thrilled to do this first of the first gambling studies, and they came back to Mr. Hara, and of course he had a rule that no meeting was more than 59 minutes.
Right.
It didn't matter what you were saying, who yeah. you were visiting, what he was looking at the 59th minute he got up and yeah. left. So the Stanford University was presenting it to him, and he said to the people, you know, he's getting towards 59. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the... So he turns his big book to the very last page, and it said, people like to gamble just because they like to gamble.
Yeah.
And that was the sentence that cost him $250,000. look, at the end of the day, we had to make it nicer. We had to make it greener. Mm-hmm. We had to make a vacation. It has a lot to do not only with the architecture, but how the employees relate, right, and how excited they are. It also has to do with the planning aspects of the project, mm-hmm, so that there aren't too many security guards or too many employees, or they're not walking 48 miles a day,
right,
and things of this nature, so it becomes financially successful. And then, believe it or not, a lot of it comes down to guys like you who walk into places, and unfortunately, you know, they're judged quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, I think Revel was judged a little too quickly.
Yeah.
And not that Revel couldn't use a little work, it could, but at the end of the day, you got to give everybody its due and a little bit, mm-hmm, of a fair chance. And some of the newer projects haven't had that chance.
Right, right. Now, you've done, you know, a lot of things in Asia. Certainly, many of the greatest projects in Macau, and you're just opening one in the Philippines in the next few months, right?
Next weekend.
Right. So it's an exciting time for your company. But let's talk about Vietnam. You got involved there very early on. I remember when you brought the gaming commission, or people who were going to be on the gaming commission in Vietnam, here to Las Vegas to show them how gaming was done. What got you involved in Vietnam? Why has that become kind of a mission for you?
It was kind of interesting. We were contacted very early on by Canadian developers who had some interest in buying a very large plot of property in Vietnam,
mm-hmm,
9 years ago.
Right.
And so we started of design, and we convinced the Canadian developers that it would be better, instead of them trying to build one gigantic Singaporean-style resort, that they maybe build three or four or five smaller, mm-hmm, resorts, maybe building to a bigger resort.
Right.
Because of the capitalization requirements and things of this nature. I think it's pretty obvious to most everybody that almost every Asian country can have a successful gaming, mm-hmm, business. I think the relationship of casinos is there are 9,000 casinos in America or betting places, and there are 100 in Asia.
Right.
So, I mean, and there's a lot more people,
right,
in Asia than there are in America. So it only makes sense. Vietnam is a gorgeous country. It's 927 miles of shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
It has, mm-hmm, some of the most historic-looking ecological architecture in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It is, of course, very, very close to China. It has a border with China. It is very, very close to Thailand, which Thailand doesn't have any gambling. And it is kind of a vacation mecca.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very inexpensive.
Right.
And it has a large, what's called Viet Q population, or Vietnamese people that hold secondary passports.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a gorgeous place.
Yeah.
And when I took many of the people, including like Clyde Turner there, everybody remarked at the beauty.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's some things it lacks,
right,
the transportation elements there, that 70-mile drive between Ho Chi Minh City and the actual piece of property is what was bad at the beginning, getting better, but still not. Traffic in Vietnam, you can never buy a car too low to the ground.
It's not any worse than Manila, though, is it?
it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Traffic is, and of course, in Vietnam there are more scooters than people.
Yeah.
But we thought we had the opportunity, which is kind of an interesting opportunity for us. I mean, there's dedicated vacation groups, mm-hmm, and casinos, Vegas Vacation, face
sure,
it, is one of the groups. A theme park vacation is one of the groups. And adventure vacation, going to Machu Picchu, is, mm-hmm, in one of the groups. A vacation with the ocean or the beach or water features or water is a group.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, that is the biggest group. So we thought that Vietnam had this triple threat opportunity. And MGM... We just recently pulled out today, but
right,
had the kind of the right idea. They had the showgirls on the, mm-hmm, beach, so They were trying to make Las Vegas glitz and glamour and excitement and 24-hour type of opportunities together right on the beach. In a, you know, not in a beach like Atlantic City, but a beach that's open all year round and right next to a gigantic jungle of which you could have an incredible adventure. And right on the Mekong Delta in that region, which is probably one of the most fertile, rich sections of Vietnam that you possibly have. So that led us to thinking that we could create something pretty unique there. And it's a beautiful building. We're more than happy to give you some pictures of it. It was built for very, very reasonable amounts of money. And it it has a lot of potential, and I do feel someday it'll be very successful, especially in the junket operation business.
Okay. So. Any possibility of building a casino closer to Ho Chi Minh or closer to Hanoi or the big cities?
I've been approached by many people to, in fact, do that. We have a quite a large theme park in Vietnam called Happy Land that we're designing, of which the owner had some desires to have a casino built within her development. My take is that the government there is a little bit like the Chinese government. They understand that you know, they have to have some gambling. And but in any communist society, I think that a communist capitalism society, which is a little unusual, I think that I don't think in the leaders' minds gambling really plays a big role. Tourism does, but gambling does not. So I think anybody who has a big touristic idea, you know, change the GDP of tourism, I think can probably go into Vietnam and garner a successful license. But will that license include locals? I don't think so.
I don't think so. All right, one last thing, and it's actually staying on the Asian thread about your hometown, Atlantic City. You've recently been retained by the group, the Marullo Group, that just bought Trump Plaza, and I understand there's an Asian theme being considered there. Give us an idea of what you'd like to do there.
Yeah, about a year ago, we presented an Asian influence project there. The biggest thing in Atlantic City is to conform to the master plan. For years, the master plan has been virtually ignored by many of the casino developers. You know, me growing up there, riding my bike on that boardwalk all the time, surfing in those waves, sailing there, I could never understand probably one of the greatest pedestrian attractions in the world, and people would turn their backs to it. But it happened. And it continually happened as people in casinos got richer and richer and richer, and as the market approached $6 billion in gaming went. But now Atlantic City has to go back to being, you know, the queen of the naughty resorts, let's put it. I like the title of that book. But I truly feel that the master plan that Jordy did is a good one. And I truly feel that every developer, every casino owner, the CRDA, who most certainly is, but and the governor should be focused on completing that master plan. And probably the biggest point of that master plan is to make Atlantic City a T. A T meaning the boardwalk connecting to the walk, and getting that integration organized. Of course, I think, you know, Atlantic City was never more successful than when the six piers operated. I know that those piers are hard to compete with the current day family based attractions, so they should be garnered the biggest subsidies possible and try to get there to extend their business hours. And of course, there's some ways to make the boardwalk a little more habitable in the winter. I mean, you know, we all know it's great weather there from September and October, and probably almost starting after the snow this stops this week. You know, there are some ways to do that. But our project at Trump Plaza, first of all, it's an old building.
And it has some disadvantages.
It has some disadvantages, but it also has some advantages. The advantages being that the main course of the master plan is to get people in the streets. And T to get a more interactive society like the Walk or the Boardwalk has.
Right.
So we will be working on a significant connection between those. We will complete the first leg of that master plan. The good thing about where the Trump Plaza Casino is, since it's a level above, that enables us to get more people in the streets and to get more commerce and activities to make Atlantic City more of an alive place.
Right.
Second thing is, we, you know, we talked about a little bit with the projects here and our overall philosophies in the Asia. You know, we want the place to be suburban. Atlantic City has always kind of had this kind of unique urban feel to it, but it's like urban beach.
Right.
And, you know, it, but along the way it was kind of lost. I mean, Steve Wynn built a beach, a grand beach palace when he built it.
Right.
But then somewhere down the line, somebody said, well, we need the Wild Wild West.
Right.
I mean, you know, and then Bally's said, well, I need a pink tower. Right. And Trump said, well, I got to build India. You know, so I mean, there was diversionary approaches to it, but the diversionary approach might be more predictable instead of being kind of a... So, Trump Plaza has a lot of great things. I think we'll renovate all the rooms, hopefully in the next 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Or renovate a significant piece of them, at least. We're building model sample rooms right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we will start a renovation expansion process utilizing the master plan as our guide.
So the property will remain open while you're doing this?
I think so. I'm not the owner, of course, but I think it has to remain open, especially that I think it can... Look, Tony Santo and Steve Rosen. Steve, of course, being a guy from Atlantic City to Las Vegas to Asia, worked in Macau a lot. And Tony Santo being a guy from Caesars, the Bally's to everywhere. Fantastic, knowledgeable guy.
Right.
Those guys all know that they can open up Trump Plaza this summer, make a great beach club, renovate the rooms, and probably do pretty well.
Right.
And start its rebirth.
Okay. Great. Well, Paul, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. Congratulations on all these projects. You guys are going to be busy for quite some time now, and you know, you're really, really major mark here as the preeminent casino architect of this generation. So we really appreciate the time.
Well, thanks, Roger. There are a few of us, so as you know, and we are happy to be in this profession today.
Great.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about the issues discussed today or anything about the gaming industry, visit our website at ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the industry, subscribe to GGB News, the only weekly e-news magazine dedicated to the breaking news of the gaming business. To see a sample issue, visit ggbnews.com. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.